Welcome to KGN News Morning Magazine. It's Monday, June 12th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, the fatal shooting of a 14-year-old by Aurora Police sparks community outrage and renewed demands for accountability. We'll have a report from Friday's rally in Aurora. Then, it's Pride Month, and CityCast Denver takes us to the newest club in the queer rebirth of Colfax. After the BBC News headlines, we'll hear the latest commentary from Jim Hightower. Then comes Storytellers of Color with Rosanna Longo-Better. Her guest today is filmmaker Oriana Ledesma. At 9 a.m., it's Counterspin, a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. After that, Anne Cantelo will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all coming up, but first the headlines with KGNU's Benita Lee.
The Suncor oil refinery in Denver has more air quality incidents compared with 11 similarly operated refineries across the country. That's according to a report released Friday by the Environmental Protection Agency. EPA officials said Suncor's issues may be due to a lack of preventative maintenance and equipment inspections. The study follows up on Suncor's $9 million settlement with the state and EPA filed in 2020 to resolve emissions and other environmental and health violations that threatened the surrounding community. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment participated in the study. CDPHE officials indicated they will use the EPA's analysis to help guide future inspections and permit updates. The State Health Department is also expected to create a new oil refinery expert role to oversee accountability. The city of Denver is winding down its Migrant Emergency Operations Center as the pace of arrivals from the U.S.-Mexican border has slowed down. In a press release Friday, the city said the Denver Department of Human Services will soon manage migrant sheltering. Officials activated emergency services in December and May to help hundreds of migrants arriving in Denver as the COVID-era Title 42 policy blocking border crossings came to an end. According to Denverite, just 30 people arrived from the border Friday. The city and partner facilities are currently sheltering some 700 migrants. The city has supported over 11,000 migrants at a cost of almost $18 million and is seeking volunteers and donations to help support its programs. State and federal donations have kicked in a fraction of that cost at around $4.5 million. A 9-year-old boy was reported missing just before 5 p.m. Sunday as he was tubing in the Boulder Creek with his parents. First responders found the boy minutes later and pulled him from the water near Broadway and Canyon Boulevard. After administering CPR, they transported him to Boulder Community Hospital, where he was pronounced dead. His parents were treated for minor injuries. According to a press release, city officials urge members of the community to exercise caution around Boulder Creeks, especially during runoff season. U.S. Senator John Hickenlooper urged fellow lawmakers last week to consider a bill that would create electric school bus fleets nationwide that could also be used to power the grid. The Bidirectional Act is co-sponsored by Senator Michael Bennett, as well as other U.S. senators from Nevada, Minnesota, and Maine. The plan would create a Department of Energy program focused on providing communities with electric school buses that could also act as vehicle-to-grid or V2G energy sources. Hickenlooper's bill would require state utility commissions across the country to consider ways to promote V2G use. Under the bill, U.S. energy officials would also analyze and report on the performance of bidirectional buses deployed in pilot programs. Denver has two new green spaces for public use. The National Western Center and Colorado State University in Elyria, Swansea inaugurated 6 acres of community open space called the Riverfront along the South Platte River last week. Picnic tables, trails, and a 250-person outdoor theater replace what was once a tangle of wastewater pipes, railroad tracks, and livestock pens. The park is part of the National Western Center's redevelopment plan. Denver voters passed a measure in 2015 approving plans that would transform the site of the annual 2-week National Western Stock Show into year-round spaces for, quote, agriculture, education, and entertainment. The center also welcomed the community to CSU's new outdoor space called the Backyard, which is connected to the riverfront by a walkway. The CSU satellite also has a new water quality lab in its hydro building. In Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins, we can expect showers before 1 p.m. and thunderstorms this afternoon. Highs today around 67 for the Front Range, with potential for heavy rain and more thunderstorms this evening. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm Shannon Young. Aurora police are once again facing community calls for accountability after the fatal shooting of a 14-year-old black child earlier this month. Around 200 people rallied outside of the Aurora Municipal Building Friday to demand justice for the family of Jordell Richardson. KGNU volunteer reporters Verity Matthews and Kira Zizzo were there and filed this report.
You can't kill me.
You can't kill me.
You can't kill me.
A 7-year-old black child chanted in front of the crowd gathered Friday afternoon outside of the Aurora Municipal Building. The rally took place just after Aurora police released body cam footage of the chase and fatal shooting of 14-year-old Jordell Richardson. Aurora police initially claimed Richardson was armed and struggled with officers who chased him down after he allegedly stole vape cartridges from a local convenience store. Police Chief Art Acevedo narrated the sequence of events that occurred shortly after two police officers chased Richardson into an alley and tackled him to the ground.
You see at 1622:40, Officer Snap tackles Jordell. At 1622:42, Jordell says, "Stop, please, you got me." At 1622:43, which is, again, a fraction of seconds, Officer Gretzka says, gun, let go of the gun. At 1622:45, Officer Gretzka says, "I'm going to shoot your ass, dude, I'm going to shoot you." At 1622:50, you hear a single gunshot.
In Friday's presser, police revealed for the first time that Richardson was not carrying a firearm, but rather a toy pellet gun.
Folks, I want y'all to understand, we've been having conversations with our chief of police since this event occurred.
Juan Marcano represents the residents of Ward 4 on Aurora City Council.
And I did not know that this was a pellet gun, that Jordell had a pellet gun, until all of you did just a little while ago today.
The killing of Jordell Richardson comes nearly 4 years after the death of Elijah McClain, a case that has become emblematic of the deadly consequences of racial profiling and police brutality. The rally outside the Aurora Municipal Building became a platform for his family, lawyers, and activists to express their grief, frustration, and demands for justice.
An old familiar place, huh? Been here before, been here, done that.
Pastor Thomas Mays leads the Living Water Christian Center Church in Aurora and has participated in police accountability efforts in the city, including by serving on the Community Police Task Force.
Why are we here again? Because our police department, our city, has not responded to our cry.
Family members and lawyers express their disbelief that law enforcement officers fail to recognize the distinction between a pellet gun and a real firearm. Jordell's mother, Lori Littlejohn, spoke passionately about her son's character as the light of the household and the devastating impact his loss has had on their family.
To know that the police didn't even try to think twice that he was a child and that he's human. People make mistakes. They didn't give him a chance to redeem himself, to suffer the consequences for his actions, and to be able to move on. In life, we make mistakes so that we could grow. They took that from my son.
With around 200 people in attendance, including community members, elected officials, racial justice supporters, and gun violence prevention activists, the gathering reflected the widespread concern over the excessive use of force by law enforcement.
But you can't protest your way out of this alone.
Elizabeth Epps is an abolitionist who recently wrapped up her first session as a state representative.
We are here to fellowship and to be in space together and to be reminded who matters. We are here to support the family. But our work is incomplete if we aren't doing the things to interrupt being back here.
Epps then shared her own experience of prosecution and conviction for talking back to an Aurora police officer. In 2019, a judge in the municipal building sentenced her to 90 days in jail. The officer remained on the force.
The same cop. What did he do later? Do you know what he did? Later that year, when nobody believed me, when nobody believed the black women who were telling you about your officer, who's back on the force and been promoted, somebody tell me what that man did later that year after he was done with me.
Killed Elijah McClain.
You can't reform that.
The law firm representing Jordell Richardson's family also represented the family of Elijah McClain. Many of the speakers in attendance also fought for years for police accountability in the McClain case.
We must get serious, community, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart. Action must happen.
That includes Aurora community organizer Candace Bailey, who spoke directly to the youth in attendance.
Youth, your voices need to be at the table everywhere. You, this is your future, this is your life. I support you, I want you at the table. I will elevate your voice. Everyone else up here, we're irrelevant. That's your world, and you are the ones who need to lead the charge. We're burning out. By the time the things that we have changed, we will be gone, and you will be left with it. Stand up. This is your future, and do not quiet your voice ever.
As the press conference unfolded, the atmosphere was tense. The Aurora Municipal Building was locked, and police officers positioned themselves on the roof, monitoring the situation. Throughout the press conference, activists and community members joined together in chants and prayers, seeking justice for Jordell Richardson and demanding an end to police violence. The event ended with a collective prayer, shared embraces, and a commitment to accompany the family in its fight for accountability. For KGNU, I'm Kira Zizzo with Verity Matthews in Aurora.
We fight! We win! We support! We love! We survive!
When nightclub owner Stephen Alex bought the old Irish Snug, he didn't know anything about Sid King or his famous Colfax strip club, Crazy Horse. But he soon learned that the bar at the corner of Colfax and Marion had been a staple in the strip's infamous and often debaucherous nightlife scene from the 1940s to the 1980s. A few decades have passed, but now the man behind Colfax's hottest LGBTQ bars is bringing Crazy Horse Kitchen and Bar back to life. CityCast Denver host Bree Davies spoke with Stephen Alex and Keith Garcia, a fellow Colfax aficionado and artistic director at the C Film Center, to dig into the myths and magic of Colfax and why its nightclubs are important to the current landscape of Denver's queer welcoming establishments.
So we're sitting here in Crazy Horse, which was formerly the Irish Snug, which most people would probably know it as, but a long time ago, it was Sid King's Crazy Horse. So, Keith, I think we should just like share with listeners a little bit about this guy. So it was like a strip club when it was Sid King's Crazy Horse, but he had this sort of like vaudevillian flair about him, is how I would describe it.
Yeah, from what my knowledge of his effect on Colfax back in the day was, it was definitely like a P.T. Barnum of sorts of the street. you know, kind of just bringing people in with promising a big show and entertainment, and don't go anywhere else for that. Colfax is the place, and Crazy Horse is the heart of all that.
And if you see old pictures, it like has this very Vegas-y 60s Vegas feel, which I think embodies a lot of Colfax, the feeling that I think when we think of the historic nature of Colfax, that's what I think about anyway. He had like a mannequin on the front of the building. It was so wild. Like, I'm trying to remember his tagline, but it was like somewhere to take your girlfriend, or like, it wasn't, it was more just like, come see a wild show.
Yeah, yeah. I wish we could get a hold of that mannequin. That would be a really cool addition.
I feel like someone out there has to have that mannequin.
Hopefully someone can
recreate the mannequin too.
True.
I have a feeling.
Yeah, so the bar now, the sign is here, but it's different. So do you feel like Sid King is this larger than life figure that helped establish what we think of today as Colfax? How do you see yourself as someone who's a proprietor of several places? How do you see yourself in that sort of story?
Yeah, I wish I had known the history before, but I mean, I'm sure that's why I was instantly drawn to Colfax. You know, yeah. I feel like there's some similarities between him and I just from the stories, you know. Sure. Of course, I didn't have the chance to meet him, but so that creation is kind of what I like, this long, wicked, you call it, but street that's got some grit to it, but not, you know, but
it's
safe.
That kind
you
of
know,
crime like, you want, you seek out, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like, I remember being a teen, you know, growing up here as a teenager, I wanted to live near Cheeseman Park. I wanted to live in Capitol Hill. Like, I wanted to be near where the action was.
Right. And even if you hear a gunshot once in a while.
Right.
You
know, like. I mean, honestly, there's parts of the city I felt way more unsafe in. I think
absolutely.
A part of it is there's often just people on Colfax 24 hours a day, and nothing is scarier than being on a block and not seeing a single person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Boring, at least.
Right. So, but you, this is one of several bars you own. So you own Tight End, which was Streets of London. You own X Bar, which has become a staple on Colfax for sure. I know you own a stake in the Squire, right? What's with Colfax? Do you just love opening bars here?
The minute I moved here, which was 18 years ago, I fell in love with Colfax.
Yeah.
They call it the longest, wickedest street, and for that I love it. It's just got an edge to it. It's cool. Just there's like this building in particular. Look at the architecture. You know, it's just amazing.
It's called Bourbon Square, and if you think about that and then you look, you're like, oh, I do feel a little New Orleans vibe.
Yeah, from the building. I do agree. You know? But there's a lot of cool architecture. And you look down Colfax and you see the mountains, and you know, it's incredible to me.
Keith, you and I are Colfax fanatics. What do you think about the bar scene on Colfax? Because I'm also thinking, like, this is really kind of an epicenter a little bit for a lot of our gay bars, our queer bars, right? We've got Charlie's as well. We've got Blush and Blue. We've got R&R a little bit farther down. Has this always been a queer spot? Like, has Colfax been that way for you?
Not until recently.
Okay.
I think it was actually, I mean, Charlie's has been there for a long time.
Right.
But that was less that this was like, oh, the queer street, but more like the epicenter that was Cheeseman, Capitol mm-hmm. Hill, all of that, where the gayborhood really
right.
kind of like emerged from. It always felt to me that like Charlie's was like it grew
out
a little bit, and then it was just touching Colfax. Like Colfax was like the parameter, like that the gayborhood kind of ended on. But then once X Bar came along, then it was like, oh, we crossed the street.
Right.
And then yeah, Blush and Blue, and yeah, R&R has been there forever. But that's, you know, further down,
right.
down
it's
east.
Like further east, Colfax.
There's now an Eagle further down west. So those are the two bookends. R&R and Eagle are like the two queer bookends of bars. But it's been, I mean, as a queer person growing up here, it's been a dream to have like a literal gayborhood of.
Yeah.
And I'm not one for the bar scene per se, but I am one
yeah,
for the drag scene
and
being
DJ
social and
DJs.
All that stuff. So it's been a dream to be able to be like, well, can I go someplace where it's a one to two to three block walk to the next place that, oh, we'll be over here at X Bar for an hour, and then I'll meet you over at Charlie's for like 30 minutes, and then, oh, let's go to Crazy Horse and, you know, hang out there for the rest of the night or whatever, that was a possibility. So
yeah.
you know, here's the hope that this becomes, stays. Yeah, this becomes a queer epicenter, and then, you know, on top of it, housing around it, and, you know, which obviously we see across the street, you know, coming around.
The old Ramada,
and yeah, the old, you know, can this building, can this all sort of like queer up and be a very safe and fun space again?
I agree, and even though we don't identify as a queer bar, we it's all inclusive for sure, and sure, because of the neighborhood becoming that, it obviously plays into that, and I think it's great. There's a lot of plans for making the street, you know, a little nicer. I'm hopeful that it's not turning into too much Rhino or whatever, you know.
Sure. So like, but I think it's impossible, to be honest with you. So
yeah,
the Colfaxian nature of it. Yeah, yeah.
It's like, it's like a rug that, you know, is so dirty it'll never get clean. But that's okay, as long as it looks good on top, as long as it's keeping the pattern. It doesn't matter that every time you step on it, like dust pops out or something like that. Yeah,
yeah.
So I'm thinking about, you know, we're going to be celebrating Pride all month long. Pride's origins here are not far from where we are at Crazy Horse right now. I used to live on Cheeseman Park, and I remember when the parade would start from there, it almost sounded like an ocean. The clapping was like so loud, but then it would come out onto Colfax and then go down. What do you both think about Pride today in context of Colfax?
I mean, Colfax is still like a main artery to this city. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously it was like the highway back in the day when Crazy Horse originally started and stuff like that. I mean, that's part of, I always remember Any Which Way But Loose, the Clint Eastwood film, Clint Eastwood orangutan chimpanzee movie.
Walking down Colfax. Yeah,
where he's a trucker. And that was the whole, that like that, the shot of him in front of Crazy Horse perfectly captures any story of that time, because that's what truckers were doing. They were coming down Colfax with their stuff, and well, were they stopping for a drink or anything else? With Crazy Horse,
when it was Route 40.
Yeah, but that's been a main artery, and that energy, even though obviously the highway I-70 is now a different part, has still kind of remained. And as far as Pride, like it's great that Pride runs through that artery. I mean, the center is on Colfax as well, the LGBTQ center of Denver. And I don't know, because of that, and because Colfax is also such like a melting pot, like this is the melting pot part of Denver. It's great to really kind of celebrate that along this strip. And, you know, Pride today, like this is a going to be a really weird year. I feel like we've never kind of felt more attacked or in danger. And the very, you know, act of celebrating Pride, which, you know, we should always remember is still a riot, you know, there's a celebration at the end of it, but it's still, we're still fighting for a lot of things. And it's great to have a main, you know, we're not hidden by going down some like side street. Like Colfax is the street to carry on down and be proud with your neighbors and get support from your neighbors and all that stuff. So
I love that.
So yeah, as long as we can keep things on Colfax.
Yeah.
Pride will be Pride.
What are you thinking about with Pride, Stephen?
I love Pride. I've always, it's just so great. I mean, I grew up in the 80s when it was, you know, it was very unsafe in a lot of places. So Pride wasn't just a celebration. It really was, you know, like
an act of rebellion and defiance. And,
you know, right, exactly. Why don't we have a straight Pride? Well, you don't need one. You know,
the world like, is, you know, every like, day.
Every day. So I laugh at that, but no, I think it's so great. And now that is luckily more of a celebration than anything else, except for now, like with things happening in Florida and whatnot, other states. You'd think we are very lucky here in Denver and on Colfax.
Yeah.
Nightclub owner Stephen Alex and C Film Center Artistic Director Keith Garcia speaking with CityCast host Bree Davies.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's all for today's Morning Magazine. Special thanks to Benita Lee, Alexis Kenyon, Kira Zizzo, Verity Matthews, and the CityCast Denver crew for their contributions to today's program. If you'd like to comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a voicemail at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for a commentary from Jim Hightower, and then it's Storytellers of Color with Rosanna Longo-Better. That's just after the news headlines from the BBC.